Satellites have come a long way since Telstar first relayed video of a waving American flag back in 1962. Now they're a multi-billion dollar enterprise involving several agencies and dozens of contractors. Yet satellites do have the potential to fail after reaching orbit. In that case, who's responsible? The Government Accountability Office decided to take a look. Joining me with some of the findings, Christina Chaplin, Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues. Christina, good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
And satellites, of course, we're talking about the not the commercial ones like Telstar, but the government-owned and operated ones such as NOAA and the Defense Department and NASA launch. And so this was a study you decided to do on GAO's own volition, correct? Not required by Congress?
Correct. We had a number of questions from Congress about incentives and what the government recourse is in the event of failures. So we did initiate our own review.
I guess it's pretty expensive if a satellite gets launched and goes kaflooey. Who is responsible? What did you find?
Yes, satellites can cost up to $1 billion each, and a loss to a mission just of one satellite can be catastrophic. When they do fail, sometimes it's hard to see who is exactly to blame. There's many contractors involved in the satellite. They're very complex. But in general, when they do fail, the government has a very limited amount of recourse.
I mean, there's an old joke about, you know, the contractor that is called up in anger by the defense agency because the satellite failed thanks to a bad relay. And the contractor says, no problem. We'll send you a new relay for free. Why are the incentives so low? And how does the government arrive at the risk analysis for who should pay when these things go wrong?
In general, the government, it's largely due to their contracting approach, and because we develop very complex satellites that push the edge of technology, we start these programs out with a fair number of unknowns. And because of that, we implement contracts where we reimburse contractors for costs, and we set up award and incentive fees along the way that pay for various aspects of what we're looking for in the deal. Some of that could be keeping costs low, keeping the schedule, ensuring quality. There's usually just a very small portion of that contract set aside for the actual performance at the end of the road. And that could be as low as, you know, 10% or even lower part of the whole contract. So when the satellite does fail, that's all the government has to go to get money back. And in the aggregate, that might be 4% of the total contract value for satellites. And there's a reason for doing that. One is the government has a lot of factors to consider when it's trying to incentivize a contractor. A lot needs to go into the equation. The other is that satellite failures are very, very rare in government. Maybe 2% is the failure rate. So they know the risk of failures are low, and that helps them set up their deal the way they do.
The risk of failure is low, but when there is failure, it is total failure. It can't be repaired.
Correct. So, it's very difficult to repair a satellite in orbit. Sometimes there can be some things done with software uploading, but that's rare. And the damage to a mission, as you know, can be fairly catastrophic.
Now, GAO made no recommendations in this report, which is a little interesting because, I would have expected you to say, well, let's divide it 50-50, the risk, or something along those lines.
As long as the government is in the business of starting programs with a lot of unknowns, of pushing technology, of having very, very complex satellites, it's going to be having to work within a contracting situation that limits its recourse. The government will always have to assume more risk. But we have made a number of recommendations in the past that can help the government get to a place maybe where it can use different types of contracts, where it lowers technology risk, where it's being more evolutionary in its approach to advancement. And that would put the government in a position to make deals that could be more equal. But until we get there, you know, you are where you are with the contracts that you have.
We're speaking with Christina Chaplin, Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the GAO. If you would review some of the recommendations that might put things on a little bit more rational footing.
Yes, in the past, we've recommended, for example, that you start programs out with mature technologies so that you're not starting a full-scale acquisition while still inventing some of the key components of a satellite. We've also recommended that you start out with very firm knowledge about requirements. also things like having funding stability, good oversight, good quality practices. And then there are other techniques that the government can do to follow a different approach altogether. It could be developing smaller satellites that are much more executable, and then inject technology advances as appropriate. It could be procuring hosted payload services where they develop the sensor and put it on a commercial satellite. And that sort of just changes the whole equation of how it's approaching its advances in technology. But there'll always be some things we do in space as a government that is going to be very unique. We do some things there that the private sector doesn't even come close to doing. They don't even pursue the same technologies. So we literally have to be the ones to invent them. They're very complex. And so you'll always have an environment where the government has to really bear the risk and pay contractors to work within that environment of unknowns.
For things like basic communication of voice or data, the government actually does use a lot of commercial capability now, or hosted payloads, as you mentioned. So we're really talking about things like, what, weather forecasting and scientific analysis that are unique to government?
Yes, something like the James Webb Telescope, for example. It's a unique telescope. It's the only one of its kind built. It's looking to discover the origins of the universe. It's a pretty complex, sensitive instrument. Satellites that do missile warning missions. The government's really the only player in that business. But yeah, you're right. When it comes to things like communication satellites, you can move more into the fixed price arena. You can also do it when you're purchasing satellite buses, and then you're getting the sensors from other contractors and the government is doing the integration. So at least you can have a mixed scenario. Also, in the cases of like missile warning satellites, after you build the first 1 to 4 satellites, you can move toward more fixed price arrangements because you have a lot of discovery and you know about the technology, you know about the requirements, you know what it's going to cost. So you can set better targets, you can set prices and put more risk onto contractors.
So it does get back to some degree on requirements and trying to get those fixed fairly early so that you can do a good job executing on a few things rather than trying to gild the lily, so to speak.
Yes, many satellite programs, the requirements sometimes are overly ambitious, and you're trying to answer many communities with one satellite. That complicates what the government is going after. The more you can simplify and the more you're repeating what you've done before, the more you can move toward a fixed price arrangement.
So it sounds almost as if the government should incentivize contractors to say, you know what, we can much more reliably promise a satellite that does these 6 things, and maybe if you took off these 4 things, you'd have a better chance of having success.
Yeah, that could help too.
And now what happens to this report? Because you mentioned a lot of programs such as the NOAA's GOES satellite, the weather polar satellites, and the web. What else is upcoming that this could benefit by?
I think this could really benefit the government in a number of ways. First, it helps everybody understand what the government's recourse is. So you know what you're getting into with any kind of satellite deal, and you can more consciously make choices. If the government really does want to share the risk with contractors more and to be less at risk itself, it really needs to rethink its approaches and move towards situations where it can be in a fixed price arena. But again, that's limited as long as the government is in the business of doing special things.
Christina Chaplin is Director of Acquisition and Sourcing Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office. As always, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Find a link to the satellite study and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.